Hi, everybody. This is Tiffany Earle with Anelity Milne. We're excited. The topic of today's call is about children with special needs. And I'm going to start with just a couple of quick announcements, and then we'll jump right into what we're going to talk about today. We're super excited. So the first announcement is go ahead and let us know if you want to host a LEMI training in your area. You can let us know anytime in November just by emailing us at officelemi@gmail.com. And that's if you want to bring a LEMI training out to your area or a parent mentoring seminar. And the next announcement is we've had requests to have the book Stream, Straight Edge, and Shadow. It's apparently almost any place you can find it on the internet. It's at least $17. Some places it's even more than that. So we carry that book now, and we'll have it. I think we can get it to you for like $14 or $14.50. That's for people that are in the Pyramid Project. So we carry that book now. And then the third announcement is Anelity and I have been working on getting our blog ready. So watch for an email from us in the next couple months for the first link to our blog. We're super excited about it. It's going to be crazy, excellent, fun, informative blog. I don't know how to describe it except that we've been making plans for this for a couple of years, and we're excited to get ready to launch it. So watch for an email from us. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our topic. Anelity and I are excited to talk about this educational topic that has everything to do with leadership and real mentoring. We've thought for a long time about this. We've had 28 years combined experience in this area, in the classroom, and even more in our own homes. We're not experts or trained therapists, so we will not be teaching therapies. We are mentors and teachers and parents. And we will be teaching some parenting and mentoring skills regarding children with special needs. As you know, when you walk into the classroom, you walk into a very incredible situation, a situation where you hold between 3 and 25 souls in the palms of your hands. And by adhering to the principles, the methodology, and the philosophy of leadership education, you are endeavoring to do something absolutely incredible, that of personalizing all you do for each student. You not only try to know your no-feel do for that day's class, what you want your students to come away knowing, what you want them to feel during your time together, and what you want them to go home and do in order to continue their learning and growth. You also try very hard to know if you have to individualize anything for any student. This includes the students who need more work, more books to read, more papers to write, more websites to visit, and more meetings with you. It includes knowing if certain students need a specific scholar skill taught, and if others need you to take time and teach a specific ability. And then there's the students who need possibly an entirely different plan, one that you help create by being close to not only the student, but also the parents. I'd like you to write something down. We want you to think of the students in your classroom and of your own children at home. Because today's call is specifically about parenting and mentoring those with learning delays, learning disabilities, and any special needs, I'd like you to identify any such students right now on paper. I have a pen right here. And so while we're asking you to write down your list, and Elodie and I are going to quickly make our list too. You can include in these nieces and nephews, people that you have, you know, any type of mentoring relationship with. There are 7 categories of learning disabilities, but we're not only going to include these 7 categories, because these 7 categories of learning disabilities don't cover all of the special needs, but I'm going to just list these ones real quick. It's in the categories of reading, expressive language, receptive language, auditory processing, memory disorder, visual perception, and writing difficulties. But now I'm going to go ahead and list some other categories of special needs and disabilities just to jog your mind to make sure you're identifying your students and to let you know that these things are real. One of them is the Asperger or autistic spectrum. I thought about listing some of the qualities on the spectrum, but it would take our entire call if I did that. So if you have questions about what these are, it's very, very easy to look them up on the Internet. You can go to Wikipedia. You can just type it in the search box, and hundreds of sites will come up if you need to become more knowledgeable on any of these things. Dyslexia qualities, personality disorders, obsessive compulsive difficulties, auditory processing difficulties, sensory integration difficulties, results from brain injury that mean learning delays, health issues that mean missed opportunities for life experience, so they're behind, anxiety disorders. These are just some areas to get you thinking. Make a list of the students that you have that may have the delays or disabilities or special needs, not to judge them, but to recognize that they may take an additional measure of mentoring. All right, with that, and Elodie's going to tell you about someone.
Hello, are you there?
Yep.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Well, Tiffany, this is, you know, obviously a subject that you and I have spent a lot of time discussing and many years discussing, and I can remember actually the first time that we started this conversation about 10 years ago, and my son was meeting with an occupational therapist, and we were talking about his sensory problems, and we started to kind of explore together our own children's sensory needs and how it started to begin the conversation that changed the way we parented, the way we saw our children, the way we worked with other children. And, you know, having started the conversation 10 years ago and continued to do a lot of personal study, I think you and I have learned some insights I think we're ready to share. I want to tell you, I really agree with Ken Robison's assertions about leadership. And he says that the result of leadership education is that a person with a leadership education is given the skills to discover their element. Where they fit in the world, and they are not put off by the tides of social pressures which would try to deny them the chance at it. I want to just read that quote one more time. Okay? They're given the skills to discover their element. Where they fit in the world and they are not put off by the tides of social pressures which would try to deny them the chance at it. I want to read to you. I'm going to give you a list of famous people who have learning disabilities and other kinds of disabilities and tell you what they are. First of all, let me start with a quote. It says, "Disability is not a brave struggle or courage in the face of adversity. Disability is an art. It's an ingenious way to live." I love that. It's not a brave struggle or courage in the face of adversity. It's an art. And let me give you an example of some of the artistic ways that people with disabilities have learned to live. Here are some famous people that we know for sure had some disabilities. Leonardo da Vinci, they know he had dyslexia. And I don't know if you are familiar with Leonardo da Vinci's ability to write with both hands at the same time. And they mirrored each other. It's because of his dyslexia. Now that's a real art.
Now that's really funny. My great-grandfather had that ability.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
I know that dyslexia is in my family, but I didn't know.
Yeah, it runs in your family.
I had a great-grandfather who could write, and his journal started he didn't do the mirrors. His was taking a sentence and starting at both ends and having it meet in the middle.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
They also think that Leonardo da Vinci might have been on the Asperger's syndrome, I mean his spectrum. Okay, Michelangelo, he had epilepsy. This is the one I love the most because it just is so profound to me. Beethoven, he was deaf. How do you become a great, amazing composer like he was and not hear what you've written? Just amazing to me. Isaac Newton had a stuttering disorder. Albert Einstein was dyslexic and they believe was on the Asperger syndrome spectrum. Charles Darwin had stuttering. Magic Johnson, dyslexia. Winston Churchill, speech impediment. One of the great orators of our time, had a speech impediment. In fact, I like to tell the story about how when Winston Churchill was younger, his parents took him to a therapist for his speech problems, and they talked in depth and about his abilities, and the therapist told his parents, as long as he doesn't ever get a job where he has to give speeches, he would be just fine. It's just crazy to me, you know, right?
Opposite of the dancer whose therapist told the mom, you have her in the wrong school, she needs to be dancing. And then
right.
She became, you know,
a famous dancer.
For cats. Yeah.
Right. Opposite of, because I really believe what Ken Robinson says is that we give them the skills to discover their element. You know what? If it was his element, he had to do it. And they're not afraid. You know, they know where they fit in the world, and they're not put off by those social pressures, which would try to deny them the chance at it. It's Winston Churchill. I think he just said, forget it, you know, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and don't try to tell me I can't. It's an art. Bruce Jenner, he has dyslexia. Claude Monet was blind. A famous painter. He's blind. Of course, Helen Keller, she's blind and deaf. Whoopi Goldberg, she has dyslexia. Bruce Willis, stuttering. There you go, another one. A famous actor, he has a stuttering problem. Julia Roberts has a stuttering problem. Robin Williams, ADHD. John Lennon, multiple learning disabilities. I like what Susan Boyle says. She says, I was slightly brain damaged at birth, and I want people like me to see that they shouldn't let a disability get in their way. I want to raise awareness. I want to turn my disability into an ability. One of my favorite stories is about Johnny Erickson Tada, who had a disability when she was 17 years old. She took a dive into a lake and broke her neck and was a paraplegic, and she became a great painter, and she paints with her mouth. artistic way to live, you know? And she goes around the country preaching about how we don't have to be depressed about the trials that we are given. They're just an opportunity for us to learn more, to become more, and to turn our lives over to Christ. So it's very hopeful, right?
Yeah.
Right? You needed to hear that today, didn't you, Tiffany? As you spend 12 hours a day working with your special needs son, right?
You know, it's wonderful, and it's definitely, every time we teach something, it's for us as much as it is for all of you on the call who we love so much. In fact, we put together a group of principles to help you as parents and as mentors and teachers in the classroom. The first principle is about the environment. Jody, why don't you go ahead and introduce this?
Okay. So, first of all, as you become aware that you have a child with a special need, some kind of disability, it's difficult for me to categorize it as disability or special needs. To me, it's just individualizing, right? And but I do have three children in my home who have some kind of special need. My second oldest daughter had dyslexia, and I didn't know it until she was about, she's probably 8 years old when we finally had her diagnosed, because I was super, super frustrated trying to teach her how to read, and I was just a brand new homeschooler at the time, and I was already floundering with my own ability to homeschool, with lots of social pressure that, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're homeschooling and how ridiculous of you. And so I think, you know, I can do this, and I'm going to prove that I can be this great homeschooling parent who can give these children a great education, you know. And so I'd sit down with my daughter, and I couldn't teach her how to read, and I was, you know, I was super frustrated with myself and filled with lots of fear that I would fail, and it was destroying our relationship. And of course, the first little thought that comes to your head, that those little hitchhikers on your shoulder want to tell you, you know, you're a failure, you can't do this, this isn't something that's within your ability. You need to find out what the experts are saying. And I agree. I did need to. So we took her in and had her tested. And we just went to the school district, and they have these batter of tests that you can do. And we had her tested, and it was very, very interesting experience. They told me after she was tested that she was dyslexic, and there are, I think, four different kinds of dyslexia, and the kind that she had was not as severe as some of the others. And the therapist was walking me out of the building, and we got onto the outside of the building, and she had followed me outside, and she said, "So I just would like to give you a piece of advice. Now I'd like to speak to you as a friend and not a therapist." And I said, "Okay." And she said, "You know, her dyslexia isn't the worst kind of dyslexia I've seen." She said, "If I were you, I would go home and put her in piano lessons, and for the rest of her life, have her play the piano, and it will do a lot for her brain." she said, "And she'll grow out of it. Just be patient." I was like, "Wow, I can't believe that we had this great therapist who gave me this great advice." And of course, you know, that probably wasn't something that the school district wanted her to tell me. They wanted me to put her in a special class or whatever. And so we created the environment at home, and we had a piano, and I became the world's best piano assistant. And we played together on the piano, and she and I did cross hands on the piano, and she and I did a lot of cross crawls at home. And we just created an environment that was not focusing on reading. And, you know, Tiffany, you mentioned that about your son, too, is that it was surprising to you what the therapist was doing with him that was not, you know, you were thinking, well, we have to focus on the things he can't do. And instead, he did other activities which caused it so that he could focus on his reading. So creating that environment might... Go ahead.
His was interesting. At that point, he had a difficult time tolerating holding a pencil or a crayon. And I would have thought that meant you color more, you write more, you color more, you write more. And so I was really surprised when the occupational therapist, he could get him to tolerate holding the pencil for 10 minutes. And I'm like, I can't get him to do it for longer than a minute. How are you doing this? And I would go to every session to learn. Because, you know, later we're going to talk about one of the principles is to use the team. Sometimes there's people who know more than we know, right? This is an example of that. I said, how are you getting him to do that? And he said, for him, it's a matter of core strength. We need to strengthen his stomach. We need to strengthen his shoulders. We need to strengthen his arms. It's his whole body that needs strengthening and why he's not tolerating holding that pencil. So he would have him climb up the net. He would have him lay on the floor, and he'd roll the big, huge ball to him, and then my son would have to kick it back with both his feet. He would do this with him until my son was very, very, very tired out, but they would spend a good 45 minutes doing multiple physical activities, and then at the very end, he would give him a dot to do and have him color it, and it was a 10-minute activity holding pencils and crayons. And
yeah.
And he,
knew how to create that environment.
Yes, and so then I learned how to create that at home. If we were going to do a writing exercise, I would, for 15 to 30 minutes, then do physical things with him before we would go to that thing, and I learned that strategy. I couldn't have learned it without, you know, without someone showing me something mm-hmm. other than sitting in a desk 8 hours a day, which is what I grew up with.
Right.
And so, yes, the environment, creating that environment to inspire and teach, you know, where the student can learn, yeah, it's so important.
Right. And I remember we were talking about our children's sensory needs, and, you know, I have a son with ADHD, and one of his sensory needs is that he needs to be feeling and touching things all the time and moving. And, you know, we got this big exercise ball for him to bounce on while we had scripture study or we had anything that he had to, you know, be sitting still at, which he never was really sitting still at. He was bouncing on the ball, creating an environment where he can participate and feel that he can participate, but still be, having his need met. And what's really interesting is I have a son who had the opposite sensory need, who's a sensory shunner. And so we had to be really careful to make sure that the environment was set up so that Zach could bounce on his ball and Matthias wasn't overstimulated, you know? it's a delicate balance,
oh, fair
right?
Not. Yeah. Yeah, that I'm gonna skip down to our number three so we can talk about the paradox. Then we'll go back to the number two, okay, and Elodie, because we have a paradox here. The paradox of the real world, which is to create a learning environment at home that is ideal to your child's specific needs, where the most learning possible can happen. Okay, safe, cheerful environment that is adjusted because it puts them in their element, okay? For instance, and this is very interesting because I happen to be a sensory shunner, so there's a scale. All of us are on the scale somewhere when it comes to sensory integration, and I didn't know this until Penelope talked about her son, and then we made the huge realization of, oh, my heck, I'm a little bit on the quirky side of that spectrum. And now I can understand myself a little bit more. How come I couldn't ever have roommates at college
I love that. I'm a little on the quirky side.
You know, he can't turn the light on when he gets, if I'm asleep. My husband has a flashlight that he uses. And what it meant that my receptors are literally 100 times stronger than other people's receptors for noise and for light and for touch. And what that means, having grown up in a family of 10, and how come I would make a bedroom in the laundry room closet instead of sharing a room with my siblings, you know? And I literally could look back at my life and go, oh, my gosh, you know, that's how I normalized myself, you know?
Yeah.
That's why when I would come home from school after having been with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other people, I would get off the bus, walk into the house, set my backpack down, get a bite to eat, and immediately go to bed, you know, for 30 minutes. All through junior high and high school and college. Just a 30-minute nap to normalize myself from all the input, right? But I didn't know any of the reasons behind any of these things until you taught me about Matthias and what they were doing, and you and I discovered that you called me one day and said, me, I have learned something about you. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
And I was so grateful for this knowledge because now I'm going to go into the paradox here of the real world. So noises are really, I'm sensitive to noises, right? Well, I have a son who literally cannot do physical work without whistling. And I'm talking the dishes. I'm talking vacuuming. I'm talking if he has to sweep. I'm talking about the normal day in and day out of our life where we actually have chores. And so if I stop him from whistling, he'll stop and he'll mind me. And he doesn't know this. I haven't told him this, but believe me, I've noticed it a million times. All of a sudden, in about 30 seconds, he's done doing his job. Just done. If the room was half vacuumed, if the dishes were half done, he's all of a sudden off doing something else. And he'll come back later and do his job, but he's whistling. So I have choices to make in the paradox of the real world, because ideal for me would be to not have whistling, tapping, and humming going on.
Right.
Right? But the ideal for my son, in order to do his job, which he's very good at and thorough, is for me to allow him to make his noises. So
terrible.
I know. Well, it's like your two sons. You've got a sensory shunner and a sensory seeker. You know, and you have to say, what's ideal for this child? Because this is the paradox, creating an ideal situation where they can be in their element. Now, here's the other half of the paradox. They still need to be in the real world that is
right.
Not made necessarily to meet their need.
Right.
And so what we have to do here is notice the skill they're lacking in the real world, and teach them, and it may take us a long time to give them a skill to manage in the real world,
mm-hmm.
right? Like when my son at church is passing the sacrament, there's no way he can be whistling, right?
Right.
In the real world, he has to have the skill of being quiet at appropriate times and still being able to accomplish the task. So that's the balance that we face as mentors and parents but if we know our child well enough, we can try and create an environment at home, a learning environment where it's ideal for them.
Tiffany,
time each day.
One of the things I think is key to noticing the skill is sometimes, you know, just us merely asking the question, what skill does he need, doesn't always bring that answer quick, you know, straight to our mind. But reading, you know, finding some books on your child's special condition and finding out what are those skills and what do experts suggest for you to introduce into their lives.
It's so true. I have a friend who's on the autistic spectrum and is an ASPE. and she has Asperger's. And one of the skills that she needed, that she noticed, was social situations baffled her, and she would make mistakes. She would laugh really loud at inappropriate times. She just would, and anyway, they were becoming tense for her. And she felt really safe with our family, and so every summer she'd come stay with us. And she hadn't been diagnosed yet, and I don't know why. I never really thought about the little things that were quirky. I mean, sometimes it would be brought up by friends and family. They would say, oh, you know, and they might make a mean comment or something. But we really love her so much, and it was never a bother or a burden to us. And then she was diagnosed, and we talked about it, and she asked me my opinion. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is so refreshing to know what it is. You know, I know you're in pain, and I know you're hurting like crazy, but here's the deal. Half the problem's done now, because now you know the skills you need. And she's like, what? I'm like, now you know the skills. We can identify the little things you have to learn. This is super exciting. And here's what we discovered. If she had someone she trusted, then in social situations, she would never go wrong, because they could have cues back and forth. And for instance, one time she walked into our home, and immediately she started, you know, shaking her hands and going, "What did I do? What did I do? What did I do? What did I do?" But we had a cue thing, and I immediately went over to her and I put my hand on her and I said, Melanie just broke a glass jar of peaches all over the floor right before you walked in. And so everybody just jumped up, and it's not your fault. You haven't done anything wrong. The best thing you could do right now is take the baby from me, and then the rest of us are going to get it cleaned up. So could you hold the baby for a minute? You know? So she just needed somebody sometimes to tell her exactly what was happening, and did nothing was her fault, and here's the best thing you can do.
Wow. You know,
and then the next 20 minutes were perfect, and she had no anxiety. But we just learned to do that. And
wow.
So you're right about the skill. For instance, right now, for one of my children, the skill that I'm trying to work on with him is to identify the physical response his body has when he has an emotion. So something that's hard for some people to do is to identify, put words to an emotion that they're feeling, okay? So to distinguish an emotion and therefore the physical response to that emotion, the arousal that the body has. So I'm trying, that's the skill I'm working on with one of my children, is to be able to put words to an emotion and notice that his heart rate is fluttering, or that he has tears in his eyes, or that he's clenching his fists. Or does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So when we have a student in the classroom, when we have a child at home, and they're continually making a mistake, that gives us a clue, oh, they might need this skill. Sometimes the skill, I know one student who can't do loud noises at all. It's horrible. They're a small child, and any clapping or loud noises, and they just start screaming and bawling and having a temper tantrum. And so her parents have taught her how to put her hands over her ears and or leave the room if they know a loud noise is coming. But try and you know. And that's a skill. That's important. They don't want her to miss the birthday parties. They don't want her to miss the family activities. They don't want her not to be able to go to church, right?
Right.
And so they try and give her skills so that in the real world, she can normalize herself.
Right. You know, it's interesting, Tiffany. My husband is on the Asperger's spectrum, and one of the things that is it's across the board with Asperger's is that they have a misfiring in the amygdala of the brain. The amygdala is where you make connection with other people, and which can cause anxiety disorder, which you kind of talked a little bit about. But one of the things that my husband cannot do is he cannot emotionally connect. And so, you know, I remember we've been reading, we read books together on a regular basis. And one of the books that we wanted to read together because it was recommended to us was the book called Hold Me Tight. And the whole book is about emotional connection. And we got about 3 chapters into that book, and I just started laughing. I said, "Dawn, you know what? I'm sure this is a fantastic book for other marriages, but this doesn't apply to us in any way. It will only frustrate me."
And right. I said, it's like asking someone without arms to catch a ball with their arms.
Exactly. And so I finally
use your arms and catch the ball.
We are not going to read this book because I am not going to get frustrated. And so we are talking about skills that are the person with a disability or the a learning disability needs to gain. We also, as people who are not have the disability, need to learn skills to cope with them. We have skills we have to learn. And one of my skills that I have in my marriage is recognize when my husband, when I cannot expect him to do that. And we probably need to get into that next principle about expectations.
That's principle 2. I'm glad you've introduced it, the paradox of expectations. Believing anything is possible and at the same time being realistic and knowing and understanding. You know, so believing your husband can have this absolutely incredible relationship and marriage with you and relationship
right.
with all your children and with his coworkers and friends, and yet knowing what he can't do, right?
Right, exactly. And I will tell you, people ask me all the time, how are you happy in your marriage? Well, there are many, many years I wasn't happy in my marriage because it was so confusing to me, you know. I'm a highly connective person. I'm extremely emotional. And I mean, if I, you know, the book, The Tipping Point talks about the 3 different kinds of personalities to help a product become great, you know, and, they talk about super connectors. Well, I am a super connector. And,
yes, you are.
it is. I just care about people. I love people. And it's a huge paradox in our marriage because I'm this super connector who loves people I love being around people and I love hearing their stories and I love crying with them and feeling deeply with them. And then I'm married to a man who cannot connect at all. And so for many years I was unhappy, but when I finally gained the skill and came to peace inside of myself that it was okay that he was this way, I found other ways for our marriage to be very rich. And so I have this great idea that anything is possible for us in our marriage, and he does too. And at the same time, we're completely realistic about his limitations. And so people look, I've had people say to me all the time, you guys have such a great marriage. How is it possible that he's on the spectrum, you know? And it's because we understand the paradox.
That's right. You know, at training, we talk about putting your student in the shutdown zone. Because there's a fine line between getting them to the place of learning, which is uncomfortable, right? And you
right.
need to get to a place of being okay with that level of uncomfortableness that you're actually growing and learning and changing versus going over the cliff where they're in the shutdown zone.
Right.
And knowing a child with special needs, where that fine line is,
right.
between the place of uncomfortableness where they're growing versus pushing too hard where they're in the shutdown zone. Any of you with students and with children this way understand the the fine line that is.
Right.
And sometimes,
you know,
it's different from day to day.
And I was going to say, I told you I have a son with ADHD. Brilliant son. Oh, my gosh. He is off the charts with his IQ. Of course, he has ADHD, right?
Right.
He may do Key of Liberty twice. And the reason is because the first time we may just be working on the skill of learning how to sit in a classroom and taking notes from the board. That may be the only thing we do in this Key of Liberty class this year.
Ah, that sometimes it feels so relieving to know that you can make a completely unique plan for each child.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Principle number four, or area number four, as teachers and mentors, create an environment where all can be on varying levels and it's okay. So when you say you have a son who may only, you know, get this much from Key this year, you bring the teacher in on it, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, let them know. I mean, I have a son with auditory processing disorder. Before he started class, I just let the teacher know. I just want to let you know where my son is. And it has always been my experience that the kids in his group are super patient with him, and they treat him totally normally. I said, but you're going to need to know what the limitation is and what the expectation is. And, you know, she contacts me occasionally and says, okay, how is he doing? How did he go? You know, how is this happening, you know, for him? And I was a little concerned about this conversation. Was this okay? And, you know, I'll talk to him a little bit about it, and he'll be like, yeah, good, Mom, you know. We're just keeping a check on him, you know. And that teacher knows that his presentations and his I wonders aren't going to be as deep as some of the others. He doesn't have the ability to go there.
Yeah. It's really, as mentors, to stay close with the parents and as parents to stay close with the mentors, it's so important. It's an interesting thing when we get a student in our classroom who's doing absolutely, sometimes 10 times the work and effort as the student next to him, and yet on a blue book exam pulls out three sentences.
Mm-hmm. Right? There's absolutely no doubt.
Yeah, I asked one student, how did it go in your blue book exam on Abraham Lincoln? And he told me, I sat there, and she handed me the essay, and I didn't understand the essay. And then she spent 10 minutes explaining the essay to me, and I still didn't understand the essay. And I stared at my paper, and my mind was so blank. I was so blank. I finally got up, and I went and drank and drank and drank and drank, and I went back down, and I finally wrote and wrote and wrote. And when I was done, it was three sentences. And that was exactly how they explained it to me. And we have to be listening as teachers and mentors, and that it's all right if they're on varying levels, and that it's okay.
And this is how we individualize. This is real leadership education. And again, going back to principle two, which is, the paradoxes of expectations. If we have a realistic expectation and give them an opportunity to grow, it might be a little miracle what happens. You know?
That's right.
You might have Winston Churchill on your hands.
And this is what's so important. In our classroom, this might be a real-world experience that the parents trust their children to have.
Mm-hmm.
Because they trust us as mentors. They're going to let their child come into our real-world experience hoping and praying that we're not going to shut that child down.
Right.
And that they can have a real-world experience and that they can navigate through.
Right.
And that's so important as in your classroom. and in your environment, and sometimes it helps train the other kids to be sensitive. Like you said, they are with Matias. They're supportive. They're careful. They know how to handle him, right? And they love him, and he knows it.
And I'll tell you what, you know, my Matias, he's very, very quirky. he's a funny
boy.
I know he has a funny laugh, and he's a little bit, you know, outside of the real world with his comments, and you know, he just is very quirky, and I love his friends. They don't laugh at him. They laugh with him. And they don't make fun of him. I have never had anyone in our homeschool group make fun of my son. They hardly even will recognize that he has a disability. And it is so apparent. I mean, there is no doubt it's apparent. It's funny because I've been hosting a young man at my house, and he's 20 years old, and I forgot to tell him about Matias, and he was here for about a week, and he said, you know, I don't want to be rude or anything, but what's up with Matias? Oh, right, I forgot to tell you that. He's like, right, after I told him, he says, oh, okay, I get it, okay. Anyway,
really funny.
I just love that his parents, his teachers, and his friends are just willing to, you know, create that personal space for him where he can just grow. It's just fantastic.
That's right.
And I'm telling you, out in the real world, maybe in, you know, more public school setting, I mean, he's not going to get that kind of treatment. I know that. And we're preparing him for that. It's just not the time yet.
Right. Okay, here's the next one, which is use the team. The team consists of a variety. Can it consist of professionals, teachers, friends, family, parents? Sometimes, as parents, we're doing our best and it's not enough. Or sometimes we need to just learn something from someone else or a new way to do something. I know for me, part of the team included certain therapies, the listening program. We had huge breakthroughs when we took our children through the listening program. The one child that couldn't read yet at age 12, after going through the listening program, could read. So when we say use the team, we mean the whole team. Get as much knowledge and education as you can on the skills that are missing or the ability that's missing, and then find the things that can help that progress. And
you know, my son, they told us that he would never learn how to read or write after we had him diagnosed. And I was working with him. Finally, my mom, who lives in the basement, had done some work with special needs kids, and she came up to me one day and she said, you know, I feel really impressed. I need to help you with Matias. And so for about 4 months, my son would go downstairs and have reading lessons with my mom, and finally my son learned how to read with my mom.
Wow. After they told you he would never read?
Yeah.
So,
amazing, right?
Yeah. There are things that are amazing and that can help, and sometimes it's beyond what we know or what we have access to. And honestly, we have a humongous resource at our fingertips just with all of us on this call. There are some on this call who are experts in different things or have experience in different things. We have the Yahoo group where we can talk to each other. We have each other's emails. We have access to huge resource. I know that the listening program, I borrowed it from Anelity. You know, it's a $1,200 program. And then it took me a year to get access to the dyslexic reading program. It's a $3,500 program. It took me a year to get access to it, and I finally have, and the growth that my children are experiencing now is tremendous. So finding the people, the tools, the stuff, that and to be there for each other, we're an incredible strength and resource to each other in providing a leadership education for our children, all of our children. And I want to touch on something here. Well, we'll do it on the next one. The next principle is about self-care. this one is kind of a big one. If you're a parent, and my husband looked it up, and I don't know how true this is, but it's something that we're interested in. My dad is a health guru. He travels around the entire, not just our country. He travels around the world, to China, to Australia, teaching about health. And one of the pillars of health, he says, is stress management. And my husband looked it up and said that if you have a child with special needs, you have 6 years of stress for every 1 year. So you knock 6 years of help off your life sometimes. is what he looked up, you know? And I was talking to a friend of mine who I was reviewing some of these things, and I said, am I missing anything? As Melanie and I teach this, are we missing something that we need to talk about with the parents and the mentors? And she said, I can only see one that you might want to touch on more, and that's the self-care. I was like, oh, my goodness. Of course, because this whole call is about the self-care, you know. and she described it like this. She said, I went through the 5 stages of grief, and I go through them over and over again with my children. And, you know, she has spent, you know, a year in primary, well, like 4 months in primary children's hospital, where every day they told her daughter wasn't going to make it, you know. And her daughter actually died twice when they brought her back. And, but she said, even with another child of mine who she had a, you know, child that was diagnosed with something, and she said, I'm in the middle of going through the 5 stages of grief, of loss, of death, you know, the guilt, the anger. And she says, I have this dream and this expectation of what my child's life can be like, and it's completely shattered, and it feels like death. I have to let it all go and let God give me something new for this child. And I'm thinking, they're never, what if they can't ever get married? What if they can't have a relationship where they can get married? You know, what if they can't serve a mission for their church? What if, you know, what if they're, you know, one of her children, she's like, what if this child is going to be in diapers forever? You know, the child is only 2 right now. She's saying, what if this child will be in, the things, she says, okay, so when you realize that, let them know that they might be going through these stages and that it's normal and that it's okay. And so the self-care is going to be really, really important. So, and only I want to talk about self-care for a minute.
Yes.
And we want you to make,
you know,
a choice.
I want to bring something up here. If you need to keep a check on yourself all the time. I'm going to share something very personal here because I want to save people the agony, if I can save the people agony. You know, I have had anxiety disorder for about 10 years. And I had a mini nervous breakdown about 6 years ago, five years ago. But it all began because of my son's birth and my inability to take care of myself, or my unwillingness to look at my situation and step back and take care of myself. If someone had taught me how important it is that I took care of myself and allowed myself the grieving process, like you said, you know, my son was born with multiple problems, hospitalized, all those things. I needed to have the space and time to go through that grieving process. I probably should have attended some kind of counseling at the time. I didn't. I didn't know that I needed to. And I just kept going forward as if life had never, you know, as if nothing had happened. And I wanted to be that strong, you know, I'll show you, I can do this kind of person. And it has really weakened me in the last...
It's really like Rick looked up, 6 years for every 1 year.
Yeah.
When you have a child that might lose something that you taught them the day before. Maybe one day they could read the word and the next day they can't. That's an incredible, insane amount of stress, right?
Yeah, because there's all kind of fear wrapped around it. And not just the fear that this child won't be able to be anything or have success or, you know, what does the future look for him, but also the stress of people looking at you and criticizing you for making the choice of having them at home with you. You know, I have a sister-in-law whose son is on the autistic spectrum, and she's decided to keep him at home with her and homeschool him. And I got to tell you, even in my own family, I'm disgusted with the criticism that she gets. You know, why doesn't she give him to a professional who can do that job for her, you know? And, you know, we have to learn how to even grieve the criticism. It's a big deal. We cannot react to the criticism. We have to learn to
change that. I like how you say that, because when you said that, it gave me a trigger of some criticism, and I haven't grieved it yet.
Yeah, it's so vital to learn how to. Now, I mean, because I'm a Christian and I have a really strong feeling that I have a Savior who's willing to carry those burdens for me. I have to go through a process almost daily of giving that to my God. You know, learning how to process through that grieving that I'm experiencing and hand it over to Him, and say, I'm doing the very best I can. I'm doing what I feel like is right in the moment that I'm making this choice. I'm choosing to have him home with me, and take care of him and his needs in this environment, because not because I think I'm a superwoman, but because I feel like it's the right thing for him. And so I need you to take from me that burden of criticism that I'm getting from the outside world.
Sometimes you talked about you didn't know the importance of the self-care, and so that led to even more health difficulties for you and Melody.
Right.
Let's talk about this. The concept of self-care, some people have it down really good. Some people have half of it down really good. Let's just discuss what self-care means. I'm going to ask some questions just to make you all think, okay, about self-care, because it includes more than we think, and we might be good in some areas and not so good in other areas. So just take a personal inventory for a minute and answer some of these questions. Do you take time to go out in nature?
So vital. You know, I have to tell you, I was having some... I was having, you know, a lot of extra stress with my anxiety, you know, picking up, and my mother is very sick, and there were some things happening with the family, and I was having such a hard time, and, you know, all the self-care things that I had known to do were not working, and finally I felt impressed to go hiking, and I went on this long hike up in the mountains, and it just seemed to cure everything.
I came back. I was grounded and centered. I had no anxiety. When those little hitchhikers on my shoulder tried to get me to start going there again, I took myself back to the place in that in the mountains and just was able to calm right down. It's such a key thing for us to find a way to connect with nature.
Yeah. This one's so important. I really think that intelligence is distilled upon us in nature, and I really think this partly because of C.S. Lewis. So C.S. Lewis is in, 15 years old in a time in his life where he's completely immersed in scholar phase. He has his liberal arts mentor, and every afternoon at 1 o'clock, what did he do? He went for a walk in the woods for an hour. That really tells us something.
Yeah.
I mean, it Absolutely. Really, really tells us something. So that's a good question for you. You can list some of these things. Is do you take time in nature? And here's the corollary to that one. Quietly. So, I mean, that's kind of a tough one, because when I go walking, I like to have a friend with me and talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's an ability we have to gain, is to be, because it's the second one. It doesn't always have to do with nature, but the second one is, can you take time to be still and have complete quietness? That's another one, a really, really important one. Do you have quiet time?
And can I mention here that we're just going to give a few ideas. You will know when it's appropriate for you to implement that into your life. I am learning this self-care to the nth degree right now. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm immersed in, So getting in nature is something that is something that I make sure that happens in my life. This quiet opportunity, I'm learning how to meditate. These are ideas of things you can do. I understand that when you're in the throes of things, it's difficult to allow yourself the space. We don't want to make you feel guilty, but what we want to do is give you some ideas of how you can cope.
That's right. Like, I know the one that I have to implement and of these that we're brainstorming with you. But I'm just going to go through a couple. A really good one is taking soaks in the bath.
Yeah, great meditation time.
That's right. That's a really good time to be by yourself and to have the quiet time is in the bath or in the shower. But that's really good self-care. Another one is to exercise. Do you take the time to exercise? Do you take the time to get dressed nicely? Do you take the time to make yourself look good, to do your hair and to do your makeup? I'm going to throw this out there. Like Anelody said, where she's working on, there's some that I'm working on. This is a very interesting study, which is about helping your child have self-worth. One of the very, very, very best ways to instill self-worth in your child is to have a good sense of self-care. In other words, to take care of yourself is what helps our children have self-worth.
Wow.
When we take care of ourselves. I know. So here we are giving our everything to our children, forgetting ourselves in the work, and we're missing a really, really, really important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do take time for ourselves, then it actually can help instill self-worth in our children, mm-hmm. that they are worth it because we know we are worth it. I mean, it makes sense, right?
Right.
That we are worth exercising.
As we're having this conversation, I so appreciate this conversation for you and I, because you know that you and I are in the thick of this and we're in the throes of this. It's so good for us to remind ourselves why we are taking care of ourselves. Because I have to be honest, when I was in the shower for a half an hour yesterday, I was feeling a little guilty. I was enjoying myself so much, you know?
Exactly.
Now
it's
I have
so
to remember,
true.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm doing the self-care right now.
And I'll tell you, there's some areas that I really admire you on, and Elodie, that you're very good with the self-care. There's some areas I have it down perfect, too. Here's the one. Do you take time for your hobbies? Like, I always admire Melody when she takes time to sew. That is self-care. It's one of her most favorite things on earth to do. And she lets herself do it. And she'll get
or when I was
project.
In the middle of getting my my bachelor's degree and working so dang hard on my education, and I would play my cello every day, you know?
Yes, yes, exactly. You took time to play your cello. That's self-care. For me, it's reading a good book. That's self-care. If I don't read a really good book, I used to read five books. Let's put, you know, having special needs in your home. I used to read five books every week. I'm down to two a month. And for one reason, and it's because I'm putting 10 hours a day into my kids right now. That happens
right.
to be my number one. It happens to be my season. I feel really confident and happy in it. And I know it's a season. But I have to get that one or two books in a month or my self-care is shot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Especially when I would prefer to be reading five a week. And it's a really, the stuff is really real. And so remember to find out what is the self-care that you need that is going to be able to help you cope with any of these things in your life if you have them in your life. And for those of you who are listening, these things matter even if you don't, you know, have these particular difficulties. Obviously, you're going to know someone who does have these difficulties. And this can give you more empathy and more compassion and more understanding for something that someone you love deals with, right?
Right.
Well, I think that it's time to open it up. It's 9 after 9. So
actually,
let's
get, we still have one more principle we wanted to introduce. Remember, we're talking about...
Yes, I'm sorry. It's printed so small on my paper. We've got to do this one.
Okay. Principle 7, yeah, because I think it's vitally important. Replacing the lies with the truth. The reason we made it Principle 7 is because it applies not only to our children with special needs, but also applies to ourselves. And coming right out of the subject of self-care, sometimes we have accepted lies about ourselves and our abilities, and we need to learn how to replace that with the truth. But I want to talk specifically about our children with special needs. The other day I was, this principle really came strong into my mind because I realized that I do have a son with ADHD and he can be very, very annoying, especially if you have children in the family who have sensory shunning problems. You know, children with ADHD have to choose certain kinds of things to normalize, and they get irritated very easily. They have a lot of angry outbursts. And it came to my mind that he had a little hitchhiker on his shoulder telling him a lie about himself. And the next morning, got up and I realized I needed to have this conversation with him. And I said, I noticed that yesterday was particularly difficult for you. And I said, could you please tell me how you were feeling? And he described how he was feeling. And I asked him, I said, so he was saying that he felt like nobody wanted him around. Now, you know, that could be a real thing with an ADHD kid, it's not true, right? We do want him around, right?
Right.
And so we were all sitting around the breakfast table. I mean, all the kids were sitting around the breakfast table, and I was sitting on the sofa with him snuggling. And I said to him, okay, I can see that that is actually a lie. And all the kids at the breakfast table said, yeah, Saki, we love it when you're around because you know everything. And when we have a question, we know you'll know the answer. You know, my son, who has auditory processing disorder, said, yeah, when I was sitting about the Big Bang yesterday and I didn't know what it was, you said, it started with a particular, I can't remember what it's called. Not a phenomenon. Oh, I can't remember the word. Anyway, he described the whole thing, you know, what the Big Bang Theory was. And he said, and that really helped me get interested in my subject that I have to do for my presentation. And you know, anyway, everyone was giving him the reason why they wanted him around. And I said to him, you need to understand something. You are an amazing, amazing child, amazing person. God has a great, important mission for you. And there are forces in the universe that don't want you to accomplish it. And one of our young men that's here at my house, he's 20 years old, and he said, yeah, because you know what, Zach? When I was your age and I believed lies, he said, I started making them part of my belief system about myself. And now that I'm 20 years old, I have to learn how to unbelieve those things. He says, you can't get to 20 years old and still believe that nobody wants you around, because that is a lie. He says, you need to learn to not believe it now and replace it with the truth. And so we did the exercise of going through, and we did it with everyone in the house, going through the lies that the little hitchhikers were trying to get us to believe and replacing it with the truth. And we had a fantastic day yesterday, and I think occasionally we need to put our little pulse on what lies is the adversary, you know, the darkness of the universe trying to get us to believe, to stop us from accomplishing that great thing that God knows we can accomplish and will accomplish as long as we have the truth in our life. And that is the art. I'm taking us back to that beginning quote. That is the way that we artistically live. How we're able to artistically live is to always know the truth. What is the truth? Okay, so I have a limitation, and this is a limitation, but the truth is I'm valuable, and my life is full, and I can have great things, and the things the universe will yield to me, all the things that I need to have to be successful and make my contribution in the world.
Okay, this reminds me of something, and as you replace, help our children and help yourself to have the dialogue to replace the lies with the truth, there's a little formula also you can do if you have a child that's in anxiety. Okay?
Okay.
And it's this. It's kind of the 80-20 rule. Sometimes because of a difficulty, we end up putting 80% of our focus on the difficulty, right? We need to watch it. If you have a child who is in anxiety and depression, it's very probable that their brain, that their mind, their focus has gone, they flipped the 80-20. So 80% of their time is focusing on their weakness and 20% on their genius. Okay, if it's been flipped, then here's how you flip it back.
Okay.
First of all, you have to go to 100% strength for at least 1 month before you go back to the 80-20 with 20% on the skills of the weakness and 80% on this formula. And here's the formula. And they can answer the question for you. They have to make a list of the things, and all of the things on this list have to have these three things in common. They have to love it. They have to be good at it. And they have to want it, have complete passion for it. And everything that they do in the day, only the things on the list, they have to be good at it, they have to love it, and they have to want it. then you can go back into a normalized schedule where 80% of their focus is on that list. Love it, good at it, want at it. 20% of what they do in the day can be to things that are impossible for them. Are you catching this?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're doing the 80-20 the other way, that the things that feel impossible for them, the things that are so hard for them, if they're doing 80% on that, oh my gosh, it's going to create incredible anxiety.
Right.
And the results will be much, much, much less. So it can get them out of the lies. Seriously, if all of a sudden you're in the love it, good at it, want it category, then it can help them get those hitchhikers off there. You know,
right.
You do this in conjunction with what is it? What is your perception right now? So his perception was nobody wants me around. Finding the perception is 50%. Once you've nailed the perception, you're 50% there, because then the other 50% is creating the truth statement and
right.
Replacing it.
Right, and he and I had the conversation. I said to him, okay, so how is it that the little hitchhiker is getting you to believe the thing that's a lie? And he says, well, he gets my irritation bugs awake. So I said, okay, how do we put your irritation bugs asleep? And so we talked about all the little, the little things that he can do to put his irritation bugs asleep. One of the things he loves to do is go out. And he is a quirky little child. He loves to go pick up one of the chickens and put them in the sling and get the chickens dizzy. It's something he loves to do.
Okay, so you literally did this. You created the love it, good at it, want it list. It will pull
right.
them out every time.
Yep. So yesterday, yesterday I noticed he went out to the backyard in the middle of the day, grabbed one of the chickens, they were twirling in the swing together, and I said, oh, he's learning how, he's working on
normalized.
Putting his irritation bugs asleep.
Oh,
it's so hilarious when he does it too. I mean, he laughs till he, I'm telling you, he almost has fits laughing with watching the chickens walk after he's gotten them dizzy.
Okay. All right. We really have kept you. I know sometimes we go till 9:30 and we've kept you on with us, and I'm just going to just see if there's anybody for a second who has a question. If you do, you have to press 5-star, and we'll just take 5 minutes for this. I know this has been such an important topic. So if there's someone with a question, press 5-star. And if there's not, then we'll just close, and that'll be just fine. Okay, here we go. I'm going to unmute you. Your line ends in 8205. Who's with us? Go ahead and tell us your name and ask your question. Okay. I've unmuted the line that is 801-389-8205. Are you there?
Okay, yes. It's Andrea Wilson, and I was hoping that you could tell me the name of that program that you borrowed from Ability. It sounded like the listening program.
That's what it's called, is the listening program.
Oh, just L-I-S-T.
Yep, the listening program, and it helps with every one of the things we've named today.
It's it's TLP, the Listen Program.
Yeah. You can look it up online.
Can you say that again? T-O-P?
T-L as in listen?
T-L.
The Listen Program, TLP.
Okay, thank you. And what was
that?
Go ahead.
What did you ask?
Can you tell
what
me
what is it for? No,
can you tell me principle number 4? I missed the title of it.
Oh, okay. Principle number 4, the title it basically is adjusting and personalizing in the classroom.
So, okay, an environment in the classroom where it's okay to have varying levels.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You bet. Okay, Jody, I'm unmuting you now.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep. Okay, I didn't get principle number one.
Okay. Principle number one is to create an environment to inspire and teach where the student can learn. So it's kind of connected to the paradox of the real world environment. So
okay.
It's
creating the environment at home.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay, I think we got it. Thank you, everybody. Oh, we've got one more, Nicole. All right, are you there?
Yes. I have a son who is in that anxiety place, but he goes to public school. So I'm wondering if you...
How to switch that.
Okay, so wait, hold on a second.
Control of the environment.
Is this Nicole? Yes.
Nicole? I'm here. Sorry.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Are you feeling are you feeling emotional about this?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, let me ask you, if it's okay with you, I mean, we are on a call with lots of people, but you need to understand that you're not the only one who's feeling this way. Could you describe to me how you're feeling right now?
I'm in this interesting place. I know that he's in the right place, that public school is the right choice for him right now. But I know that he is struggling with his confidence and his ability to succeed there. And he's old enough that he really wants to be independent. He doesn't want help from his parents right now. And so it sets up this feeling of stress as we work together because he needs the help, but he doesn't want the help. And so it causes more struggles, and then that causes him to feel unsuccessful in his work because he needs the help. And he doesn't believe us when we try to remind him of his abilities and how smart he really is. He can only focus on the things that he's not doing well. And so
okay.
I feel a little helpless.
Okay. First of all, I think you need principle 6 and principle 7 in your life right now.
Okay.
They're probably the two most important principles for you to implement, which are, remember, self-care and dispelling the lies. You know, Tiffany had recently, just last year, put her son in kindergarten because, you know, there's many, many reasons, and she felt impressed that that's what she needed to do. And he was there it was an 8-week thing he was there for, and it was the right place for him to be. And she learned an amazing amount of stuff during that 8 weeks. It was very, very important for her process and for her son's process, okay? So when you're making a choice that's difficult to make and outside of anything else you want to do, it's super, super important that principle 6, you take care of yourself, and principle 7, that you dispel the lies. What I'm going to recommend that you do is give yourself an opportunity to go hiking today or get in the bathtub or spend some time doing, you know, something really important for you in the next few days.
Okay.
Get yourself in a really good space and then have a Principle 7 conversation with him. And you
help him identify the lies, if he can actually have that kind of conversation with you, remember to make the list of the love it, good at it, and want it category.
Right.
And give him permission to spend. Now, this is wholesome stuff. It has to be wholesome things. These are in the educational environment and the exploring environment. This isn't in the entertainment
right.
environment. Okay?
Right, like
you
chickens
love
in the backyard.
That
that's
about it, you know.
Right.
Give him permission to spend time in there every night when he's home.
Yes. Okay. And I know that it's that's counterintuitive, because the first thing that you're going to want to do is you're going to want to say, well, he needs more help when he gets home, right?
Right.
But he's on the anxiety spectrum. More help isn't going to help him get de-escalated. You need to give him lots of space to get de-escalated every day. So the way you want to have this conversation with a Principle 7 conversation is, I sense that you are having a lot of XYZ, whether it's anxiety over, or I can sense that you're having a bad day, or I can sense that, could you please tell me how you're feeling? And then
okay.
Validate it. I understand that you feel that way. Can you identify any lies that you're believing? And ask him specifically, are there any lies that you're believing? And, you know, I am amazed. I am simply amazed that our children are able to identify lies so quickly. And as soon as he starts identifying those lies, listen to him. Don't try to dispel the lie yet. And then when he gets his list of lies out on the piece of paper or tells you, contextualize his life, meaning show him how his life is, okay? So one of the things that I said to my son was, well, I want to contextualize your life, okay? Here's your life. You have parents.